Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studio in the heart of Hudson County, folks. You know, it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you the three-time, and I do say again, the three-time award-winning politically direct. And I am New Jersey's premier journalist and top 100 Latino in 2021 via the Latino Spirit online magazine, Fernando Uribe. Hope you're all doing well, ladies and gentlemen, here as I come to you on the 8th of April. Yes, warm weather is upon us here in 2021. And I just want to thank you all for listening from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout Garden State. And of course, all my friends throughout the U.S. of A. Now, you can write to the show's inbox, folks, at any time. It's politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Maybe you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic. I love to hear from you. We got, again, a great lineup of guests coming up here in the month of April. I'll tell you a little bit more about that later on in the broadcast. But, again, if you have a suggestion for topics, I love to hear from my fans and obviously from my loyal listeners. And, folks, I do answer my emails promptly. So, again, right to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Also, remember to follow Instagram, follow the show on Instagram, folks, at politicallydirectnj, as well as my own Instagram, at Professor Fernando Uribe. And certainly, I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, some politics, memes, pro wrestling, motivational quotes, politically incorrect humor. That's just what I like. All that and much more, folks. You'll always find it on my Instagram, again, at Professor Fernando Uribe. Also, hit me up on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen, at NoFilterUribe. That's at NoFilterUribe. And for all of you folks, subscribers, for those of you that don't have your account suspended like I do, I have about 13 days left until I'm off suspension. Please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course. And tell your friends to do the same. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, to check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the absolute best coverage of what's going on in New Jersey's political scene. Nobody does it better than Insider NJ. It's not the Star Ledger. It's not NJ.com. It's not NJTV. It's not the Asbury Park Press or anywhere else, folks. It is Insider NJ. Once you go on the website, upper right-hand corner, you'll click on it, and guess what? You'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So, subsequently, during the mornings, if you're watching the sports debate shows like I like to watch, you know, First Things First on FS1 or Undisputed with Skip and Shannon or even The Herd with Colin Cowherd at noon. I'm always scrolling through my inbox, and guess what? When I do, it's always nice to see the morning intelligence briefing there waiting for me. So, again, check it out, ladies and gentlemen, and certainly it's the best columns and journalism you'll find in the state of New Jersey. I'm proud to be part of the Insider NJ team. I say it all the time. Certainly a big thank you to the Graham family, specifically Mike Graham, who continues to believe in this program, so I'm very grateful to him. And my Insider NJ general manager, Pete Onelio, who I tend to kind of drive crazy sometimes, and I'm sure he gets a lot of emails or comments from people. But, again, his support of the podcast is something that I greatly appreciate here every week via insidernj.com/podcast. And certainly, again, you know, shout out to my teammates. I don't like some of them, but, you know, I'll give them credit where it's due. And, you know, we'll start with our editor-in-chief, you know, Max Pizarro. A little too liberal for my taste, and sometimes his views irritate me. I'm sure I do too, but he's a great journalist. He's a great writer, notwithstanding some of his views, which are downright atrocious. But in any event, hey, you definitely want to check out his columns because he gets the scoops, and he obviously has great sources. You definitely want to check that out. Also, folks, you want to check out Fred Snowflack, who I particularly love reading on a regular basis. He's, you know, he's been, you know, a regular on this podcast. You know, I look forward to having him on later in the month. Catch up on what's going on in New Jersey politics, and certainly, again, his columns, you know, top-notch, so you definitely check him out. Even Jay Lasseter, who I particularly don't like whatsoever personally, but I'll give him credit where it's due. You know, he's an award-winning journalist. He's a guy who's an advocate for the LGBT community. He's a guy, again, he's a great writer. I don't like his views whatsoever. I think a lot of times they suck, but, you know, I'm entitled to my opinion. He's entitled to his, and, you know, we don't have to like each other. And, you know, thankfully we don't have to work with each other per se, but, you know, I respect what he does. I don't know if he does feel the same way, but I don't really care. But, again, I'll give him credit where it's due. He's a great writer. Check out his columns, folks, with Insider and Janels. Even Alan Steinberg, who's a regular on this podcast. I mean, he's on every month with me here on insidernj.com/podcast. And Alan will drive me crazy. You know, a lifelong Republican, man, but I'll tell you, he's taking such a hard swing left sometimes that I'm like, whoa, what in God's name is going on here? But he's very informative. We have great conversations and debates on this show. So as a matter of fact, he'll be my guest on next week here on the podcast. You definitely want to check that out. But again, folks, I couldn't say how proud I am to be part of the Insider NJ team. And certainly you'll benefit from reading Insider NJ. Again, folks, www.insidernj.com. To follow, obviously, Insider NJ on Twitter and like them on Facebook. And remember, folks, to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Folks, again, as a reminder, the opinions and views expressed here and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, the staff, or our sponsors. Folks, hope you all had a wonderful Easter. It's great weather this week. I believe it's going to continue into the weekend. For all you pro wrestling fans, I tell you, it's WrestleMania weekend. Yes, WrestleMania 37. I remember like it was yesterday when it was WrestleMania 1 in Madison Square Garden on March 31st, 1985. My God, the years have flown by. But again, for all you big pro wrestling fans, it's a Super Bowl of pro wrestling this weekend, folks. It's just not one night. It's two nights of WrestleMania. So for you, for those of you who subscribe to the Peacock Network, streaming online, you'll get to watch both nights of WrestleMania 37 live from Tampa in Raymond James Stadium. Obviously, you saw people during the Super Bowl in that same building. You'll see about half the building capacity this weekend during WrestleMania. So get to enjoy that and some of the good weather as well, folks. You know, we got a lot of stuff going on. And for those of you that follow me on my own social media, I'll be doing my show with former State Assemblywoman Maria Rodriguez Gregg tomorrow night live at 6 p.m., you'll see it on our Facebook Live via StreamYard, so you definitely want to check that out as well. But folks, you know, one of the things I take pride on this program is I bring in exclusives that nobody else does because, you know, a lot of journalists don't like to have conversations. A lot of journalists don't like to talk to other journalists because sometimes they're a little fickle or they're a little territorial. Not on this show, folks, because I like to talk to fellow journalists. And when speaking about journalism in New Jersey, folks, in Hudson County, he's the GOAT. He's, as far as I'm concerned, he's in the Mount Rushmore of journalism in my lifetime. Folks, he's the great Al Sullivan, the columnist for TapInto.net, specifically in Jersey City and Bayonne. He joins us here on Politically Direct. What's going on, brother?
More of the same. This is the fun week where everybody gets to figure out who's running for what.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Absolutely. Al, it's good to talk with you, man. You're always a wealth of information.
Let's dive right into it. I talked about it on my local podcast yesterday. I'll be talking about it tomorrow, my live StreamYard Zoom show tomorrow. But I got to tell you, Al, you know, the 31st Legislative District is getting weirder and weirder by the day. And, you know, back in 2018, after that entire saga ended with, you know, turmoil within the HUDO, we thought we were going to see smooth sailing for the foreseeable future, but it just seems that in Hudson County, Democrats are at each other's throats again, and in the peninsula city of Bayonne, it seems like Bayonne Mayor Jimmy Davis is not listening to anybody, not Governor Murphy, not Senator Robert Menendez, not Senator Cory Booker, not John Curry, the state Democratic chair, not even probably Mayor Phillip. It seems like Jimmy Davis has dug in his heels, and he's going to go down with the ship in what he thinks is his guy for the line. What are you hearing right now in the 31st Legislative District, Al?
Well, at this point, you know, it may, you know, the primary here is probably going to go with the HCDO and, you know, the way Davis wants to. The problem is it sets up a mayoral conflict the following year, next year, because what it happens is a lot of things are being established now that look like they're going to force people to take sides in Bayonne. You know, there was a lawsuit filed, I guess, about a week ago that raised a lot of questions about what goes on in City Hall and the kind of behavior that is taking place as far as work ethic, and it involves a woman who is the second highest ranking person in City Hall accusing a lot of people very close to Davis of harassment over, you know, who she is, her abilities, and that's divided City Hall. So, you know, and it may wind up that it will become a major campaign issue next year. It may even become a major campaign issue this year with the primary. But it suggests that there's a lot of turmoil going on inside the Davis campaign. The woman has accused top people of Davis of harassing her. And she lists about 30 different incidents in the lawsuit. And considering the kind of there have been previous allegations, not even before Davis, of this kind of behavior in City Hall there, this suggests that it has a lot of life.
Well, Al, you're right. It does have a lot of life. And I was just talking about this earlier today as I was filming the latest edition of Talking Politics. And I got to tell you, I'm reading some of these. I'm reading the accusations here, and I'm reading about what's going on, and it's amazing to me how it seems that this behavior has been going on for quite some time, and it almost seems that, again, I'm not making accusations, I'm not trying to slander anybody or defame anybody, but it just seems that, wow, you know, this is something that she's been documenting for some time. It's not like she just didn't concoct this out of nowhere. It seems like this has been building. And it's almost like, you know, that kettle, when you're making tea, if it overflows with hot water, now it's sort of like it's all over the sink, if that makes any sense.
Well, here there's a few other dynamics to this, okay? One of the people she's accused of harassing her, she replaced. There was a candidate for her job prior to her getting it, and that person sort of had some erratic behavior in City Hall, and they decided to replace him, and instead of giving him the job, they gave it to her. She was the pick of the council president, not the mayor. The person she replaced was the mayor's pick. So there's another dynamic there, that there's clearly a factionalism going on inside the administration. And, you know, the council president and the mayor have not seen eye to eye all along. And it was, you know, they were drifting away. And now to have people who are associated with the mayor harassing her pick for the, you know, business administrator adds to that tension and adds to the potential that next year the council president could become a candidate against the mayor.
Well, let me unpackage a little bit here. So, again, as we know, you know, as reported in the Jersey Journal this week, Melissa Matthews, as you mentioned, Al is the city's first female business administrator. And, you know, so again, we're talking about things like this has been an ongoing saga in terms of what she's documented in the lawsuit. And then, you know, you just mentioned right now about the city council president. I think part of the ongoing drama, Al, between Davis and Cervellotti in Bayonne is that there seems to be this rumor that doesn't die that Cervellotti was working behind the scenes to sort of undermine Davis and maybe trying to sort of encourage the council president to run next May for mayor. But it's my understanding that I think the council president came out publicly and said, no, she's endorsing Jimmy Davis and she's not going to be running, that she's part of Team Davis. Is there any truth to that? Have you heard that?
Well, I think she to say, you know, once Davis jettisoned Cervellotti, she became vulnerable. And there's some question as to whether Jimmy Davis will even allow her to run on his ticket in next year. And so she's saying all the right things, but there's a suspicion that Davis at some point when it comes down to actually filing the ticket will have her on it. You know, if you're getting rid of Cervellotti for plotting against you, do you keep the person he plotted with against you? The reason Davis had to act now is that he had the option to get rid of one enemy right away who would be reelected and be in a much more powerful position to run against him to work against him as a state assemblyman. By not allowing Cervellotti to become the assemblyman, that eliminates a very powerful enemy. But he has time to wait to see where Sharon, the council president, ends up, or just to not allow her, to lure her on to thinking that she's going to be on the ticket when, let's face it, if you're getting rid of one of the conspirators, you're going to get rid of the other one sooner or later, too. It's just the timing of when you want to do it.
Absolutely, and that's a great take on this, Al. And but you know, it has to beg the bigger question here. It's almost like, you know, listen, your sources are infinitely better than mine. But a lot of people I've talked to still can't put their finger on this. They still can't get to the bottom of this saga and say, wait a minute, what does Jimmy have? Is there a text message somewhere that we don't know about? Is there an email that he has on an external hard drive, safe and put away? I mean, there's something other than just the natural excuse of, oh, well, he's just paranoid, which I get it. You know, people in politics can be paranoid. But it just seems like people really can't come to a consensus about, like, what drove Jimmy Davis to do this?
Well, I mean, there has been no secret in Bayonne that Sharon, the council president, has not been happy with some of the policies Davis has had, as, you know, mm-hmm. some of it on development, some on other things. And there's some dissatisfaction on the Board of Ed, which Cervellotti controls, about some of the proposals that Davis has for the school district, because Davis has taken the lead to try to find new buildings and other things. Development is like out of control for some people in Bayonne right now. We're seeing huge development in a town that's not accustomed to that, especially in the center city. And so there, as Cervellotti, you know, there may have been these conversations. I mean, Sharon has not been quiet about it. And she's in several cases, she has stood up against the mayor at public meetings and opposed his agenda. So it's not like there's this secret that, and she's been very vocal of her criticism of the mayor. So it's not, that part is not secret. What Davis is not telling people his exact reasoning for it. Most of what we're hearing is speculation. And, you know, in all the sources in Bayonne say that, you know, he found out that Chevrolet was encouraging Sharon. I don't know that nobody really actually knows if that's true. But the fact is that the mayor acted at a time when he had to, because otherwise Chevrolet would be the second most powerful person in the assembly working against him, as opposed to somebody who's not in a public office at all. I think the timing was important to Davis that he do it then. It shocked a lot of people, but I mean, it makes sense. You know, if you're going to go after a guy, you politically end him and put him in a position where he's less powerful to come against you. I don't know if that's paranoia. I probably think that's wise politics.
You know what, Al, that's right. And again, you're always a wealth of information, and you always hit out of the ballpark with these observations. Let me ask you this, because, again, it's become public knowledge. We know that as far up as Governor Murphy made a phone call, we know both U.S. Senators, Bob Menendez and Cory Booker, reached out to Mayor Davis. And specifically, you know, Jimmy Davis, who's a big Bob Menendez ally. I mean, he's a big, big Bob Menendez guy, you know, I mean, he's in that circle, you know, in terms of allies. And, you know, you had John Curry, you had Assembly Speaker Coughlin, and it just seemed like even HCDO Chairwoman Amy DeGees reached out, and nobody could, you know, penetrate the surface or even chip away at the armor. Jimmy Davis seems to me, Al, and again, I'm not trying to sound defamatory, but it looks like Jimmy has put a huge bullseye on himself with this decision. Is that fair to say?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because people who are close to Chevrolet, and I'm talking about very close to him and very close mm-hmm. to some of the powerful people, are not criticizing Davis inside Bayonne. In other words, from what I gather, and I got this from one of the people who are collecting signatures for the ballots. Doria signed on with the Davis on the HCDO, and if there's mm-hmm. nobody closer to Chevrolet than Joe Doria, and people close to Albio Cires are telling me that, you know, Davis expected Chevrolet to do several things, and Chevrolet was not able to deliver. So there may be legislative reasons why. In other words, there's two other issues sitting in the mix. There's the redevelopment of the Marist property, which is the old high school, the Catholic high school that closed, and the city is closing on it. And there's plans for some huge project there. And apparently there's a lot of conflicts over in discussion between Council President Chevrolet and Davis over how that's supposed to transpire. More importantly, Davis had put on Chevrolet's shoulders to solve the issue of the Bayonne Medical Center purchase. And Chevrolet was supposed to be somehow reaching out into his state contacts to make sure that the vendor that the city wants got it. So those are other issues that are more substantial that Davis was disappointed in, apparently. The question is, if those are out there, why aren't you just saying that? Saying, you know, I'm firing this guy because this is what I expected and he didn't do. The problem is not the action so much is his silence as to why.
Well, you know, this is a really crazy saga, Al, because I think now as we are approaching June 8th, you know, Chervalotti's not going to go quietly into the night. And I think he's been very clear in getting on the ground, getting signatures. And I would argue this, again, who knows, people have won off the line before. It's not impossible. I mean, we'll talk about the line a little bit later because that's also been in the news and the headlines. But it's not, you know, it's not uncommon to try to win off the line. But I think that realistically, you know, if Chirivalati has a good showing in Bayonne, I think this is more the long game where he could throw his name into the ring to run against Davis in May of 2022. You know, that district's very weird because it's the south side of Jersey City and the entire city of Bayonne. You know, if you can't get votes in the south side, that's probably bigger numbers that you're going to need, not just only in Bayonne. And I don't know, again, I'm not trying to count him out. You know, he still has political capital. But if Chirivalati's not on the line and he's trying to win votes on the south side of Jersey City, that might be a problem. You know, is that fair to say?
Yes. I mean, Jersey City decides who the candidate is. I mean, who gets the nod. I mean, it is two-thirds of the district's votes. And that's the problem. A lot of Bayonne people resent that. But it's true. I mean, Chirivalati's done very well in the past in his previous effort to run off the line. He ran off the line with the great 2007 Civil War. He was on the stack ticket. Remember with Manzo and Seth? And he won Bayonne, but he lost Jersey City. That's the problem, is that for an assembly to – I mean, this is different than Stick Romano, who won off the line. Stick had two real distinct advantages. He was a very active person as a freeholder or commissioner, and what do you call it? He was well-known. He's a former cop in Hoboken, and he was very popular in the Heights. And also his opponent, who's now the councilman of Hoboken, went against the HCDO in his rhetoric because he's a progressive, and he couldn't get off. He got indicted by the HCDO and then betrayed them. So that all worked. This is not the same dynamic. But what it does, this is a test, I believe, of Chirivalati's ability to bring in Bayonne. If he brings in Bayonne with high numbers, then almost most people believe he will be the candidate for mayor. Or, you know, it would be better him than Sharon. Even though I think the issue with the lawsuits, Sharon is in a better position to run. Because she's a woman and she's running and she can run the campaign against Davis saying, well, this is an anti-woman atmosphere and I'm going to correct it. But either way, if Sharon jumps on the Chirivalati bandwagon at the last minute, then you know, either way, it's a dynamic duo.
No, it really is, Al. And, you know, obviously what's happened with Chirivalati has raised a lot of debate or sort of renews the debate. And I've talked about it on my local podcast, Talking to Hudson. I've also talked about it on my other shows, my streaming shows. And, you know, just last week I had, in a regularly scheduled appearance, I had HCDO chair Amy DeGees, and I asked her, I'm like, hey, listen, you know, it seems like these progressive groups in New Jersey, Al, whether it's, you know, United Progressives of New Jersey or the Hudson County Progressive Democrats, whatever, you know, they've been really harping on social media, but like, hey, we need to abolish the line because of how unfair it is. And now, obviously, you know, they got ammunition now because of what happened with Chirivalati. In Morris County, for example, now it's happened to a Republican assemblywoman. And it seems like these people that have been really adamant about abolishing the line, they're emboldened now, Al, because it's almost like they want to just say, and I'm not trying to be, you know, facetious here. It almost seems like they want to be like, you see? See what we've been talking about for months, and you laugh at us, and look what's going on. Look what happened in Hudson. Look what happened in Morris. You know, we need to abolish the line. And I'm just looking at my notes here because when I interviewed Chairwoman DeGees, and I'm just sort of paraphrasing here, you know, Amy was sort of not dismissive. Amy was just very clear and blunt and said, listen, you know, when I go vote and I look at a ballot, I know who I'm looking for. I know who I'm going to vote for. I'm going to make it a point to look for them on the ballot. It's not that difficult. So, you know, when you go vote, and if you know what you're doing, then what's the problem? And you know what, Al? I think that's a viewpoint that a lot of people have, whether you're Republican or Democrat. And I think that's why county chairs like Amy DeGees and others say, hey, there's no need to abolish the line. And when you go vote and you look at the ballot, you know who you're looking for. That's it. End of discussion. That's what I hear from people like her. And guess what? That's not too uncommon now, you know, in Hudson or any other county.
Well, she told me flat out that even if they had an open primary, the same results would be, because they're better. In other words, one of the problems with the progressives, okay, and they don't understand the nature of political. They're operating on a totally different kind of politics, which is called issue-oriented politics. There's two types of politics. There's organized politics, which is the committee system, which is what the line comes out of. And then there's these issue politics that you raise an issue and you get popular uprising. The problem is they've come at this with this somewhat questionable study by a Rutgers University person who said, mm-hmm. and I'm not putting down Rutgers. They're my publisher too. The line has significant advantage, and it has an advantage, but not what they want. This is a woke professor who was going to give these people this. Politics is an organized process, and if you have committee people, and if you have all of these other organizations or people working, you have people in every district, two people, a man and a woman, who are constantly working for your candidates. That's the overwhelming difference. It's not the ballot that makes the difference. It's the committee and the organization. I'll give you an example. This woke group, the progressives, went after Bolzano last month because he refused, or I guess it was in January.
It was January.
He refused to vote for the impeachment thing. And they got six committee people to come to the Democratic chair in Jersey City and say, you can't support this guy. And then 40 people from the committee people came out in support of Bolzano. The problem with the six woke people and the progressives is only two of them came from his district. There isn't a really organized – they are really not as organized as they think they are. They're trying to scare and raise issues, and they're legitimate issues. The problem is they don't know how politics works. They are not organized. The people who are speaking at meetings in Jersey City and other places aren't generally from Jersey City. They're from New York. They're socialist groups from Central Jersey that come here. They don't have ground great game. They don't have people in the district. They have a few, but they don't have the kind of political organization. And politics is an organized game. The more people you get in your team, the more people you get, the more votes you get. That's the issue. It's not the ballot. It's not who the HCDO endorses. It is the fact that they have so many people on the ground drawing for their candidates. That's how they win elections, and the progressives don't understand that. So they even if they change the ballot, it's not going to happen. What happened in Bayonne, and it was a few years ago, I guess about 10 years ago, a guy named Giappone, he sued and successfully did away with the ballot, on a municipal level, the line. In other words, he forced it to be into a lottery system, okay? And it became, and guess what? The Smith campaign he ran against still won overwhelming. Okay, in West New York, I believe they had a committee battle, and they had they had six candidates, the organization, scattered all over the ballot, and they all came in. Why? Because they're organized, not because of their names appear on the ballot. There is some advantage to that, especially for people like senior citizens and other people who find it easier to find the names that way. But it's not what wins the election, and that's what the progressives don't understand. If they want to be organized, they would find their own HCDO and develop their own system and then have their own endorsements. but they're not organized, and they're issued, and they don't have the kind of groundswell that the HCDO has. That's the problem.
Al, you explained it beautifully. And listen, I've always been the type to go after progressives because it just seems like you said it perfectly. They're not very organized sometimes. You know, they might think that they're sort of focusing things on a macro level, but they're not. It's more micro. And listen, that's not always appealing to everybody. And I think that, you know, listen, as an alumnus, believe me, trust me, I hate to hear about Rutgers professors that contribute to some of this insanity, but that's academia. But back to your point about how the line is perceived, this is just something that, again, it's now affecting a Republican assemblywoman in Morris County. We'll see in the next few weeks and months if any litigation is filed and if this goes to court, because at some point, if it goes to court, I think it'll be very interesting. I think it'll sort of put this practice under the microscope, and then we'll find out exactly what happens statewide. So definitely want to stay tuned for that. Just to sort of wrap up the Cervellotti thing, you know, Al, it's really interesting to me because it seems that, you know, you're seeing a lot of dominoes kind of falling in the sense of, you know, Senator Menendez closes down his office in Newark at the Gateway Center and moves it into downtown Jersey City. It seems like Senator Menendez wants to have, again, continue his strong presence in the county. It's his home county. I think he still wants to be of influence. And, you know, who can blame him? I think anybody probably tends to be that way in that position. But it seems that, you know, it seems like Bob wants to keep an eye on what's going on in Hudson. I think that's how a lot of people are perceiving that move to the downtown Exchange Place area for his new office. And I think he also kind of wants to see what happens here because I just think, Al, that, you know, Jimmy, you know, listen, that's his prerogative. You know, he can do that. I think that other counties, you know, county chairs might have more say than the mayors do when it comes to these line, you know, nominations. But it just seems that, you know what, I think Jimmy's put himself in a really bad spot. And I think that, you know, the powerful in Trenton are watching, and this could come back to bite them. That's how I see this.
Well, you're right. I mean, I think that when you look, Cervellotti and Menendez are incredibly close, okay? Cervellotti worked for Menendez. Cervellotti has been very loyal to Menendez. And Menendez, you know, has a gripe with Fulop. Well, Davis is very close to Fulop lately, and that's a problem. I mean, you're seeing – because there has been some, you know, things that Fulop has done that has probably really alienated Menendez, and it's making Menendez look like he's losing control here. I definitely think his moving to the office to Jersey City sent a message that, you know, I'm still here. And now the question is, what does he do in Bayonne? I mean, is, you know, I think Cervellotti, if he runs for mayor, does have the ability to put together a very powerful ticket, since he is probably single-handedly the person responsible for getting control of the school board. Almost all of the key people on the school board are his, and a number of them I think would make really fine candidates against the Davis ticket. So it would not be a weak ticket if he runs.
I agree with you. And I think that this is something that, you know, again, it's a long game. You know, despite what happens on June 8th, you know, again, if Cervellotti doesn't win off the line and William Sampson, again, we continue forward, and William Sampson, you know, is, you know, the winner and runs with Assemblywoman McKnight and State Senator Cunningham, which we'll talk about her a little bit later because I'm a little concerned about some of the things I'm hearing about Senator Cunningham, but it seems like that's the ticket that obviously will go forward. And it's almost weird out because for the longest time, you know, we've seen Hudson County have a great presence down in Trenton in the legislature. I mean, before,
yep.
You know, even before being, the, you know, the majority whip, I mean, let's think about this. Before Amy became chair in 2018, you know, Assemblyman Vincent Prieto was speaker, okay? This is not something that
yep.
people expected out of Hudson County. I mean, maybe going back to the days of Albio Cires, but that's a while back. And Hudson's had quite a presence in the legislature with Shervalowdy out. I think you can make the case Hudson's taking a little bit of a hit in Trenton.
Well, I agree. And I think, what do you call it? Shervalowdy, people don't understand his history, too. I mean, he's the guy who negotiated the military ocean terminal to come over when he was working for Menendez and Doria for Bayonne to get that property for free. Now that is the hottest real estate in the county. And he's the man who did it. So, you know, you are losing expertise in a lot of areas. Some of his legislation is groundbreaking in this trend that, you know, holding people accountable, getting the kind of responsible reporting on the hospitals and other things. So you are losing something that, you know, for that's clearly a political decision. It's not based on, you know, what his track record is, because he has an incredibly good track record. Plus, you know, he's also, as part of the Hudson County Community College, he's the guy who brokered that funding that allows a lot of people to have access to college. I mean, he's all over the place in his accomplishments. That's a problem. You're losing all that. Samson has no track record. He didn't even vote in some elections. So, you know, it's clearly a political choice. And, you know, the problem with the politics for me is not that record sometimes doesn't matter as much as the political machine does. And that's the disturbing part for me, is that here's a very competent human being who's being jettisoned, and the loss to the district and the state is immense.
Oh, it is, Al. It certainly is, and I'll certainly be keeping an eye on this race coming up to June 8th, obviously with primary day right around the corner. I believe tomorrow is the deadline for petitions to be submitted, if I'm not mistaken. So
yes,
we'll definitely see what's going on here. Let's move on to some state stuff before we get back to Hudson County, Al, because it's, you know, we just, it was a, it's April 8th, and, you know, there was a poll last week that was released, I think the first poll from Stockton University, and I'm always very leery about polls. I don't always take them seriously.
Me too.
But it seems like Governor Murphy is polling pretty well going into his reelection campaign. I think we've talked about it on previous appearances. You know, again, history is not on his side as a Democrat incumbent governor. Has not won reelection since Brendan Byrne. I mean, that's before my time, and that's a long time ago in New Jersey politics. And despite the fact that the governor seems to be polling high, there are pockets of the state that are firmly behind him, obviously the county machines and all the blue areas. And it just seems that, now again, we saw yesterday, I think it was Insider NJ reported it, New Jersey Globe reported it. It seems like not just only is Jack Chitarelli within the Republican primary race, but now we're seeing Phil Rizzo, we're seeing Brian Levine, other guys apparently have submitted the necessary signatures. It seems like funding-wise, they've submitted the necessary funding requirements. It just seems though, Al, whoever wins the Republican primary right now, it seems like Jack's the favorite, but it's April and he's not getting traction. Like, I'm sorry, I know Jack. I've interviewed him on this program multiple times. I should be interviewing him again, I think, coming up next month before the primary. He's not getting any traction now. And I'm not trying to be mean, but we have to call things for what they are, bro.
Well, I mean, the problem here is that many, many, many of the voters for the Republicans have simply moved out of the state. That was their vote. Because over the last decade and a half, the economy and the taxes drove them out. A number of my family members moved out because it's easier to move than it is to fight. The problem now is that the areas most negatively affected by Murphy's decisions under the pandemic happen to be the shore communities and places that have less population overall. So they have a less of a vote count. The machines are very effective. You know, he's got, I think it was, he has a 58 or 60% approval rate, which is phenomenal considering that the last year was chaotic. but the issue here is we have not felt the effect of his decisions on COVID, the closing down of things. We are still we're just starting to get at the end of the COVID, and as long as there's federal stimulus money coming in, it's sort of like a Band-Aid that hides the real impact. And that's not going to hit before this election. Or will barely hit. It usually takes about 6 months ahead of election for the economy to really have an effect on the election. And I think we're the Band-Aids that have been passed through Biden, this last one, is going to keep the Band-Aid on until after the election. So I think Murphy has a really good chance of being reelected. And that's, even though I see most of his decisions as completely partisan, he has not represented the whole city, the whole county, the whole state. And the problem with that is that a lot of that affects small businesses. And those are the people who would normally be the bread and butter of the Republicans. And I think they're all scared. I mean, all of them are on the gravy train right now. They're all hoping that the money – and where does the money come from? It comes through the state. So Murphy looks like Santa Claus, even though his decisions caused most of the problems for these businesses. But who's going to speak against them if they're waiting for a check from him?
No, Al, you're absolutely right. And I talked about this on my other programs. As a matter of fact, I have Phil Rizzo on my Monday night show live on Real Talk, so looking forward to talking to him. And, I'm going to pose the same scenario to him as I have to everybody else. I just think that, it's a weird election year in New Jersey for the following reason. You just touched on some topics there that I think really resonate with me, where, listen, it's April. Okay, today is a beautiful day here where I live in the city. I'm sure it's beautiful all throughout the state. People, I think, after being home for a year and everything that's kind of happened with COVID, it just seems that, okay, once the weather gets warmer, people are going to be out doing things, maybe taking vacations, maybe just being outside doing things. And, this election's going to be in the rearview mirror for a lot of people. And this, once the summer comes, people, political junkies like you and I are going to be following this stuff, but a lot of people won't be. And most New Jerseyans don't follow races until after Labor Day. And if the governor is getting the stimulus money from Washington and again, I have an issue with a lot of the pork in the stimulus bill because a lot of it is just bailing out blue states and their pension funds. New Jersey is one of them, obviously. And it just seems like people are going to forget this. And if the economy improves, if people's unemployment checks are coming in, it just seems that people, I think Murphy's going to benefit from the fact that people's memories are going to be very short. And they may not remember what happened in this past year. I know small business owners will. I know activists will. I know a lot of Republicans will. But it's not enough, I think, to override the fact that Murphy has numbers. He's got registrations, obviously, on Republicans. Democrats via Republicans. And I think at the same time, people in New Jersey, again, they have short memories, Al. People in New Jersey, when it comes to politics, ma'am, if they're not paying attention right now, they won't pay attention until after Labor Day. That's months and months of this just sort of going under the radar.
Well, I agree. And I also think that all of the negatives are not going to happen until after the first of the year. The major, major decisions on a lot of businesses, because the stimulus is holding up, is basically keeping the economy buoyant artificially. But generally businesses in this state start looking at their bottom line after the Christmas sales. January and February are the big months when there's a huge, huge turn down. Businesses collapse. That's when most of the short-term effects of the stimulus will evaporate and people will get real, you'll lose jobs and all of that. That's all going to be after this election, okay? And that's, and at that point, people may start wising up and getting paid because it's affecting their jobs and their paychecks. But until then, we're like living in Never Never Land because all of this, people who are getting unemployment that's more than their salaries are not going to complain, You know, and that and their and businesses are still not all completely opened up, so they don't know the impact either. And so, you know, and also as we're opening up, there's a sense of relief, and Murphy benefits from that. I mean, even though he's the cause of much of the problems, I mean, Jersey is one of was one of the worst states for handling the economy of the COVID because
mm-hmm.
things
yep.
are opening up and people are going, well, as you say, they can go out again. Well, they're going to just say, well, he handled this well. It isn't until after we all, you know, it's when you get the check that you suddenly realize that, well, we haven't even reached dessert yet. You know, and so that's going to be a problem. I mean, it's going to be a problem because after the fact, we're going to have to live with Murphy for another 4 years and his decisions. You know, the upside of this is that, you know, even though historically Jersey generally had an opposite party guy as governor than the presidency, Biden looks to be another Jimmy Carter. The Democratic federal is going to fall apart, and I think a lot of decisions there are going to actually help the Republican Party nationally, and we'll just eventually be in limbo here with a governor who is a progressive at a time when the country will probably start become more conservative again. That's a sort of an upside, that there's a balance to this. It won't be very good for New Jersey because we're going to be stuck
sure.
with massive amounts of bills.
Oh, no, absolutely. And listen, again, as a conservative, I like to hear that obviously on a national level, but you're right about New Jersey. It just seems that people are going to be getting a check. People are going to be seeing some sort of economic prosperity, not a lot, but you know what, again, people's memories are short term, and you know, you said it beautifully. People probably won't see the after effect or the impact of this until after the first of the year. And if Murphy gets reelected, then we're stuck again with another 4 years with bad policymaking. And notwithstanding that, but we're also looking at bad legislative policies coming out of the legislature because, you know, Democrats still hold majorities in both. And aside from maybe a couple of districts, you know, Democrats are a little bit vulnerable. It seems that, you know, the districts that Democrats have solidly, like up here in Hudson, for example, like there's no concern in the 31st, 32nd, and 33rd that state senators Cunningham, Stack, and Sacco are in any danger, and neither are the six assembly people, per se. You know, obviously, you know, from what we know, you know, in different pockets of the state, down the shore, those red areas probably will stay red. Down in Union County, you know, people like Joe Crine, they tend to be safe. You know, so it seems like these policies will continue, and people, again, are not paying enough attention, Al, and it's, you know, they pay attention when it's too late. And I think you just said it beautifully, people won't realize until after the first of the year, and guess what? Phil Murphy is getting the second term, because it just seems like Republicans can't get out of their own way. At least that's how I see it, Al.
Well, you know, there's also, what do you run on as a that's effective? In other words, the governor and all of these people are going to run on we're recovering, and that is a really good campaign, even if it's not true, but it's a really good campaign. And how do you go against that? How do the Republicans, because they need to find something that's equally powerful, and I don't see that kind of, you know, issue out there for the Republicans that can real. I mean, the reason why, what do you call it, Chris Christie was able to win is he managed to disable the Hudson County Democratic organization through bid rig 3, and he was also had a really incompetent governor, Corzine. The economy was crashing. You had corruption in the Democratic Party. Those were very powerful issues he could run on. I don't see those issues right now that allow a Republican to run effectively against, we're recovering, there's a lot of money here, we're going to help you, we're going to help everybody, you know, this feel-good new, well, I guess it's the new frontier. It's like a Kennedy-type thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't see the I don't see what the issue is that the Republicans can run on. That's the problem.
Al, you're right about that. And again, sort of, you know, it's interesting. I bring this up all the time in my other programs. You know, Chris Christie still, you know, obviously had to barely scrape by. I think he won by 5 points in 2009. But it was an easier job for Chris to run against a really incompetent governor in John Corzine. And again, you know, listen, Christie knew that, again, Democrats sort of outnumber Republicans registration wise, that hasn't changed. But I think what Chris was able to do in areas like Hudson and other counties where normally a Democrat wins, let's say, 90-10, okay, well, guess what? You know what? He was able, you know, he still lost Hudson County, but guess what? He lost it like 65-35. That's a big,
right.
big difference, you know, and the same in Bergen, the same in Union. When you chip away at those margins, that's how Chris was able to produce a 5-point win. I don't want to sort of discard the other people that are announced, but it seems like Chiarelli is going to be the nominee. It seems like on primary day, he should be the guy that wins. He's, you know, he's been working on this for 3 years now. It would seem that Chiarelli, the former state assemblyman, is going to be the Republican nominee, but it just seems like, and I just saw his first ad, you know, last week during opening weekend of baseball season, thank God, you know, watching the Yankees, you know, on during the broadcast, I saw 5 Chiarelli commercials. But, again, they were the same ones, and they were nice. But, again, you know, maybe because I'm a big pro wrestling fan, I want everything to be bombastic, and I want people to be, like, loud and emphatic in a promo. Jack just came across as very, like, okay, well, people are nursing homes, the economy's bad, and, you know, he sort of ends the commercial with, hey, you know, when I'm governor, things will be better. And
right.
that's great. That's a great closing.
Point.
But exactly. And it's very vanilla. No disrespect to Jack. I know Jack personally. I can text him right now after the program and talk to him. He'll entertain my phone call. You know, it just seems like it's a very vanilla campaign, and someone has to take it. The way Christie took it to Corzine, someone's got to take it to Murphy. Otherwise,
absolutely,
you're sort of just glossing over what's going on now.
I agree. And you know, there's a two aspects of this. And one of them is you raise what the problems that the governor caused. I mean, Murphy is skating because he's not being held to the same standard as Cuomo is. And yet Murphy did exactly the same thing Cuomo did when it comes to nursing homes. Same thing that happened in Pennsylvania. Murphy seems to be Teflon. That no one seems to be holding him accountable to the fact that these nursing homes, there were orders for these nursing homes. We did not protect our senior citizens. There was plenty of warning. In other words, you know, all I heard from Democratic operatives last March was how Trump had waited a month, you know, and no one's pointing out the fact that there was a lot of warning from Italy that senior citizens were the number one target of COVID. And we made no move to save them or do anything for them until after someplace late April when the bodies started mounting up in nursing homes. And then suddenly there was a rush to help them. But they all knew. And that's where the Republicans need to be saying, when did you know and what did you do about it? And that's the kind of campaign that needs to be. But then also, you know, the other aspect of that is, how will we do things differently in the future to save, protect senior citizens and to make sure that businesses, which are the backbone of this state, are going to be able to survive and thrive again now that the COVID's over? Those are two messages that I don't think the Republicans are handling well, and I think they're important. And, you know, you're right. It has to be loud, and it has to be strident. And I don't know if, you know, the Republicans have a candidate who can do that. Christie was notorious for being strident.
No, you're right about that. It just seems that, again, it's April, and, you know, it's not like there's a lot of months left. I mean, again, once the summer comes, Al, people just aren't going to be paying attention to the gubernatorial race and legislative until after Labor Day. I mean, I get it. You know, they'll be going up and down the state. They'll be at, hopefully, if things are opening up more, you know, they'll be at festivals. They'll be at outdoor, you know, farmers markets or something. And I get that. But it may not be enough to get people's attention about issues that still matter. The nursing homes, the fact that, you know, we're still spending ridiculously. The new state budget is absurd. It just seems like nobody took an economics course in Trenton, and nobody took a policy course. And I'm very punitive about that, Alan. I know people say to me, oh, Fernando's just like an academic elitist or he's a snob. I'm not trying to sound like that. I'm just like, I'm all about policy. I'm all about numbers and economics. It's like, I don't have – listen, my PhD is not economics, but you don't need one to understand that, like, Trenton spends and borrows irresponsibly and taxes irresponsibly. Again, Al, this isn't trigonometry. This isn't calculus, Al. It's not hard to figure out, man.
Well, the bottom line is – somebody's paying the bills, and you generally, you know, no one really cares about who's paying the bills. They just spend, and that's a problem. I mean,
yep.
You know, and you know, we talk about millionaires' tax, and they're now talking about all these other taxes. Well, that's our money. I mean, yeah, we're getting a stimulus, but who's, you know, two things about the stimulus. Where does the stimulus money come from ultimately? It comes from taxpayers. This isn't money that these politicians magically printed up. So in other words, somebody else is paying for all of this. And the ultimate thing is, ultimately that money runs out. And, you know, and the fact is we're all going to have to pay more later for what we're getting today. And the problem, you know, when and the same thing, you know, when all these people get the stimulus check, and I'm grateful for it. I got my roof done, but, you know, because I had a leaky roof. Problem is, it's not free, and nobody understands that. They're treating it as if this is a gift from God.
No,
it is. It is a loan that comes with heavy interest, and people don't realize that.
Oh, absolutely. Al, it's frustrating, to say the least. Al, let me pick your brain about a topic that has been in the news for the last few weeks. And, you know, I'm really going to try to control myself here because my dislike for this guy has really protruded in recent weeks on my Monday night show, which, by the way, Al, I'll forgive you if you tell me you haven't been watching Real Talk via Eisen and Jay. I'll forgive you because I know you listen to my other show, so I won't.
I mostly pay attention to your other shows. I appreciate it. You know, because I have to cover stuff remotely.
No, of course. No, I appreciate that. But I've really been going after Tom Moran for some time. And the reason I do is, again, you know, listen, he's paid his dues. He's cut his teeth. I get it. He's the editorial chief of the Star-Ledger. I would argue the Star-Ledger has lost a lot of credibility, in my opinion, in recent years for what they publish. And I think Tom Moran has gone from being a journalist to a full-blown propagandist, if not cheerleader, which is fine. You know, you want to be a cheerleader for liberal politics, that's fine. Congratulations to you. But you should be open and honest about it. Like, I don't apologize for the fact that I'm someone who is a center-right guy. I'm a conservative-leaning guy. So I don't apologize for that. But if someone asks me, oh, well, Fernando, are you an objective journalist? I'm like, I'm going to say, well, you know where I lean. Seems like Tom Moran struggles with that. But the reason I bring up Tom Moran is obviously he's been in the news. Him and Esther Suarez, I think, are going at it. Esther Suarez has been in the news as well. You know, Senator Robert Menendez seems to think that Esther Suarez, the current Hudson County prosecutor, is the best fit to be the next U.S. attorney for the state of New Jersey. But things have been coming out about Esther that aren't very favorable, and I think it's making Senator Menendez look bad. But also, Esther Suarez has some baggage that people, you know, people are looking into now, and it seems that, you know, Tom Moran now is in the crosshairs because of what's going on with Esther Suarez. Have you heard about what's going on? What are your thoughts about this?
Let me caveat something. There's no major news organization now and no major news network that isn't kowtowing, and that's a bad term, to the Democratic liberals. Every journalist that I know, there's no, almost no conservative journalism right now in the state. I mean, you have David Cruz, who is literally just rubbing up against the politicians because he gets access to them. You have the Star-Ledger, you have the Asbury Park Press, the Bergen Record, or the is completely just a propaganda organ. the advantage of Morant is every once in a while he would come out with something that wasn't completely in the Democratic think tank talking point. That was always his benefit. And the problem here, too, is now he's going after he's been going after her on questions that should be legitimate areas for exploration and should have left other reporters to ask those questions. He's the only one, and we're watching him be dismantled over, you know, he supposedly grabbed her arm trying to get an interview, and that becomes the story rather than the story he was raising and other people should be raising. You know, I have no love for him either. I mean, you know, I think he's arrogant in some cases, but and I don't like the fact that he went from being a conservative to being a apologist for the liberal agenda. That's the problem.
He's a cheerleader.
The problem is they all are now, and he just bought that. He just hopped on that gravy train. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem because he at one point was different, and now he's just the same. But on this Flores thing is they are taking this one incident and refocusing the story away from her and onto him. And that's classic anti-journal. You know, that's classic. That's how you destroy conservative journalism. And that's what's going on all over the country. So they're just, that's the problem I have. I don't particularly like him, but I don't like what's happening to him either. This is, you have the state attorney general who was super political saying we're going to investigate this. Well, what about the other issues he's raising? Why isn't anybody in government? Because her connections... And I like Esther. I mean, I think she's a great lady, but she screwed up the sex sexual allegations from the Murphy campaign back in several years ago.
Yep.
I mean, you know, she literally did not handle that well. She has other issues. Her connections to Menendez and to Stack are part of her political legacy. And, you know, she got their job because she was connected to them, not because there were other equally qualified candidates. So, I mean, she has other baggage. I mean, she's part of the Hudson County, political organization. And that's, I don't know if she would make a good U.S. attorney for that because of that. Because she's too connected to people she might, as a U.S. attorney, might have to investigate. I mean,
you're right about that. And let me just add this, because the Katie Brennan situation is one that, you know, the governor's office got a lot of scrutiny for. You know, we had like weeks of hearings. If you remember on NJTV, they were broadcasting them live, and they were, again, you know, to this day, there's still a lot of. There's still a lot of uncertainty about what happened with Al Alvarez and Katie Brennan.
Right.
And what,
absolutely.
And who
that's
knew
what
was.
I was referring to.
Suarez. And who knew what in the governor's office. And then at a local level, and I'm not trying to pick on Esther. I've met Esther. She's kind to me. She won't come on my podcast because she doesn't want to come and talk, but that's fine. But the bottom line is that, you know, it seemed like, well, she wasn't aware of what was going on. She made it seem like, well, I kind of heard about what happened, but, you know, you look at Oprah request, and by the way, you know, I have no love for David Wallstein. I think David Wallstein's a despicable guy for a lot of reasons I think we know, okay, and that's not slander. I don't think that's being defamatory. I think we all know what we think of David Wallstein, but I'll give him his due. How he finds these things on the New Jersey Globe and where he digs this stuff up, I mean, he put it in Oprah. And it seems like Esther Suarez was copied on every email, was copied on every memo about what
Absolutely.
Was going on with Katie Brennan. And now it seems like, you know, she is trying to sort of, you know, play damage control and say, well, I wasn't really aware. I mean, I kind of saw the emails, but I didn't. And it just seems like this is the stuff that I think the Biden administration and the Justice Department, and I'm sure Attorney General Merrick Garland is going to look at it and say, well, I don't know if this is an Attorney General we want in New Jersey, considering the good ones we've had for some time. Again, nothing against Esther. She's a very competent attorney. I'm not saying she's not. She hasn't been a good prosecutor. But the problem is that this is baggage that's slowly but surely building. It's almost like, okay, you know, it's almost like the battery on a smartphone. Yeah, it was empty, and now it's kind of building back up again, and it's getting greener and greener. And it seems like Tom Moran is now under the microscope for, like, kind of trying to expose her. And now it seems like, you know, the Attorney General, Gabriel Gawal's office, and now Esther's office is going after Tom Moran. I'm talking about going after him like
that's
a ferocious
lion. That's exactly the problem. That's, in other words, we knew back even at the, just after the, you know, the question, look, they knew her office had the information within 24 hours of the incident, okay, that there was a two prominent people in the campaign involved in this. They had it. They did the test. A lot of people blasted the local police, but I talked to the local police, and they said it went immediately to the sex crime unit of the Hudson County Prosecutor's Office. She got emails about all of it. We knew that even after they came out with their conclusion. The problem is they waited until after the election to actually tell her that they weren't going to handle the suit. This lingered on for a year. Okay, that's all the prosecutor's office. Okay, the fact is the emails show that she did know, that she was apprised of every step of this investigation, that she, you know, she's saying, I didn't, it was, there were too much. This is a prominent investigation of a prominent Democrat in happening under your nose in Jersey City. She knew, what do you call it, and the emails prove that. The question here is, you know, the fact is, did that office deliberately delay this until not taking action on it until after the election? Okay? That was one of the serious questions. And if she knew, and the office finally produced, you know, saying they told her, and then it got raised in the Murphy campaign, and she went to she had to go to the Wall Street Journal to get action. That was media outside the state, and it was what then was considered a conservative publication. Okay, that's the problems here, is that this was clearly delayed until after the results of the election, so it did not have an impact on the election. There wasn't even any reporting of it. Okay, there was no media coverage for 7 to 8 months, and then they didn't make a formal announcement. Then Alvarez got recommended after Murphy was sworn in January that he should resign, and that so this came from top Murphy people. Well, what do they know that we didn't know? And that had to come out of the Suarez investigation because that's the person who was in charge of the investigation. So they knew something that caused the person in the State House, and it was, I think it was his chief of staff, to tell Alvarez he should resign. Alvarez refused. He didn't resign until after the Wall Street Journal called him, and that was 8 months after that. So all of this timing suggests that there was a cover-up here to not have this issue raised in the middle of election. That's another serious blow against Suarez. And I agree with you. I think the Attorney General is going after his classic, you know, not answer the question in the investigation. The Attorney General should be looking into whether – but that is the wrong Attorney General for that, because this is a woke type Attorney General who is so loyal to the governor. You would need a special prosecutor to investigate this, and I think that's where, you know, you'll never see. It's too late for that.
Oh, I agree with, you know, again, we're sort of looking at this is a blemish. I think some people would argue during the Murphy campaign. Again, listen, I'm not trying to raise an apples to oranges argument here, but let's look back at 2013. Okay, as Governor Christie was running for re-election. Okay, we knew he was going to win in a walk against State Senator Barbara Bono. She was a sacrificial lamb for Democrats. Okay, and again, I'm not trying to minimize what happened with Bridgegate. Okay, I think that was an egregious thing. I'm glad that the U.S. Supreme Court vacated those convictions against Bill Baroni and Bridget Kelly, which, by the way, we'll get to Bridget Kelly in a moment because I'm looking to interview her soon on Real Talk as she's going for Bergen County Clerk. But, you know, that was a case where, if you remember, Christie, and rightfully so, I'm not trying to give Chris a pass, but Christie got crucified for Bridgegate. And rightfully so. Again, I'm not going to say that he shouldn't have, but it's interesting how the New Jersey media, NJTV, The Ledger, Asbury Park Press, NorthJersey.com, you know, obviously the Bergen Record, whatever, were all about crucifying Christie for this. And I'm not saying it wasn't serious, but there are some things here that New Jersey media has not gone after the governor on. Let's be honest. Again, this entire situation with Katie Brennan and Al Alvarez. And remember, this is the same governor that in September of 2018 was adamant in front of a camera saying, you know what, Brett Kavanaugh should recuse himself and should recuse his name from this Supreme Court nomination process. We have to believe all women. It was a hashtag believe women, hashtag believe women, hashtag me too. Again, I'm not saying it's not an important cause, Al, but let's be honest. You know, that same ferocity that Phil Murphy had about this movement about believing women, well, that's not the case because in New Jersey that didn't happen with Katie Brennan. And right now across the river, you know, I get it. He has to work with Andrew Cuomo, but there's crickets about whether or not Andrew Cuomo should step down. That's a double standard that, unfortunately, again, Tom Moran doesn't cover, David Cruz doesn't cover. I'm the only one that talks about it because, again, I think I'm the only credible journalist that's willing to discuss this openly on streaming shows that gets traffic. I just think this is stuff that, you know, if this happened under Chris Christie now, I think Christie would have been crucified. I mean, double stakes in the hand, in the wrists.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no, you know, almost every, you know, and I'm not sure, you know, I'm not a fan of Christie. I mean, him
yeah,
and I have had
neither.
Barbs, yeah. Personal barbs, you know, mostly jokingly. But I've offended him seriously enough where they threatened to sue me once. So I'm not a fan of his. Okay. The question here is fairness of the press, and we're watching media literally doing the dirty work for the Democratic Party. And that's the problem here. There's a romance in most of the major media in Jersey City with the Democrats that can do no wrong, or when they do, they minimize it. This has a lot to do with access to power. In other words, Christie had hostile relationships with the media from the start, the way Trump did. Okay?
Yeah.
So he was so there was no reason for media to groove up to him. But the media likes access. I mean, like David Cruz is my example. He's my former editor. I liked him as my editor. But he's now embracing the fact that he can make a phone call and people will answer his phone. And that's more important than actually doing nuts and bolts journalism. And this
yeah,
is true with – and getting more and true with Moran. I have no use for North Jersey.com, the Bergen Record. They have been a propaganda machine even before Gannett took them over, okay?
Yeah.
Asbury Park Press problems, all of these groups are too infatuated with the Democratic access to power, and it's called the official sources syndrome, and that's a problem. So that if you don't ingratiate yourself to media, then they will come after you, and that's what Christie did, okay? But these other, right now, nobody's willing to take on Murphy and his administration because we are too caught up with the fact that these people talk to us and that they give us credibility. I mean, that's not our job. Our job is not to be part of their mechanism. Our job is to hold them accountable, and we're not doing that. You are, a few others are. but it's mm-hmm. not the mainstream media. And there seems to be institutionalized problem here.
No, Al, I agree with you, and I think that – I think you said it beautifully. I think we've – the liberal media in New Jersey, these institutions, again, the Star Ledger, the Bergen Record, I think NJTV is also culpable here. They've just been, I think, very content in just, again, carrying, you know, waving the pom-poms and being, I think, enablers of what's going on in Trenton. And I say this all the time where I get it. Maybe, you know what, you've been in the business so long that – you know, and I hear people tell me, well, Fernando, you know, they've been in the business forever and maybe they're just comfortable now. So maybe there's not a necessity for an effort. I'm like, you know what? And Al, I always bring up your name. I always say, you know what? That's not true. Because I know people that have been in the business a long time. Some people like Al Sullivan that, you know, he's cut his teeth five times over. Okay. He's rolled up his sleeves and he's not a guy that is just an apologist for anybody. I mean, he does really good, hard news. He actually makes it a point to research and inquire. That's not the same with other people. And it just seems that brand of journalism is dying. And before I let you go, obviously, you've been the gentleman to be on with me for an hour here. But before I let you know, I look at today's brand of journalism, and I get it that it's changed a lot, Al, because of technology. I mean, obviously, we're looking at 25 years of the Internet. We're looking at about 15 years or so, give or take, of social media. And that's infinitely changed the way that we consume news, that we can report the news and produce news. I just think we're headed down a really bad path because even New Jersey, you know, institutions that we used to rely on, that we used to trust, are no longer trustworthy. And it just seems that when you say it, I mean, my producers at Eisen and Jay, and even my boss at Insider, gets a lot of hate me emails. And he'll bring to my attention, hey, you know, why don't you take it easy on so-and-so, because I got a phone call today or I got a phone call yesterday. And my response is always the same. I'm like, listen, you know, I'm not defaming anybody. I'm not engaging in slander. You know, you gave me creative control here to do my show the way I see fit. I'm going to talk about issues. I'm going to report the news to some extent. I'm going to have guests on. You know, I don't like to be micromanaged here. That's not what I'm doing this for. And it just seems that, you know, longstanding institutions, Al, have let us down. I've been saying that for months, and people call me paranoid or people call me salty because they'll say, well, Fernando doesn't have yet the in with certain politicians. He doesn't, you know, his phone call doesn't always get received. He doesn't always get a response. I mean, I get people talking to me, but it's not like these others. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to compromise my integrity just to make sure that, I don't know, somebody picks up the phone the minute that I call. I don't know. I'm just not willing to do that, Al.
Well, look, here's the other problem is, and this is not a problem, you know, you're in academics, but the problem is that journalism is being taught differently now. When I went back to college when I got a journalism job because I was a creative writer, and I had a hard-nosed, really tough professor who had been in the trenches of really hard news. And he taught a different kind of journalism. We're now teaching people academically a different kind of journalism that is more social justice type. That we're not being objective. We're not listening to both sides. And this has been happening for a while. And that's a different. They've taken over. You have social justice journalists who have taken over every major media, you're not going to go back because that other kind of journalist doesn't exist anymore. That's a problem, you know, and it's coming out of the institutions. It's coming out of professors who have, you know, are old school radicals who have decided that, you know, they couldn't make the dream happen. So now they're teaching a different, and we need to get back to, I mean, Columbia University is a total waste of time at this point. I mean, it is just Whereas Missouri, there's a University of Missouri which teaches investigative reporting that's still legitimate, but not many are. That's the problem, and it's what's being taught. And the institutions like the Washington Post, which and the New York Times hire these people, and that affects the kind of coverage you get. And until you get back to the idea of what your mission is, which is to hold accountable everybody, and I don't know if we can get back there. Not the way it's being taught now.
Al, I'm with, and it's disappointing. It is, I think it's just something that, you know, again, I didn't go to school for journalism. You know, when I went to undergrad at Rutgers in Brunswick and I went to graduate school at Rutgers in Newark, I mean, my degrees are in political science. My degrees, you know, are in the social sciences. I teach U.S. history. Like, I did not go to school for journalism. Everything I've learned about journalism is by watching great journalists like you and my own research. And, you know, it's, I sort of learned on the fly, and I'm not saying I'm God's gift to journalism. I'm not. But I think that, again, the internet, I think social media has made it easier for people to sort of pursue this or, you know, this sort of industry. But I think that, you know, you hit the nail on the head. Journalism isn't being taught anymore in the way that we used to think at marquee institutions. I mean, Columbia University is nothing more than a haven to charge kids, you know, $125,000 for a four-year degree, where basically you're just getting indoctrinated. And that's not
absolutely.
That's not college. That's not higher education. And I think that's trickled down into journalism where, you know, you look at the mainstream cable news outlets, and when you see, you know, activist blogger or activist journalist, I saw someone, I think, from USA Today that was a guest on CNN, I'm not surprised. And apparently she is like the race and inequality reporter for USA Today. I'm like, are we having divisions now in
Absolutely.
These newspapers? Like, this is insane. I'm reading the race and inequality reporter or the race and inequality or whatever for USA Today or for other. It's Al, I'm sorry.
So you have a built-in bias from the start. You know, that's the point. That if you name your reporter that, that's all she's going to report on. And it's called agenda setting. In other words, you've established the agenda that you want to people to believe, and you just sell that point. And it's really interesting. I mean, there are several real good books on analyzing how journalism works and framing of journalism. I use them as textbooks for my own job.
Nice.
What not
nice.
To do. You know? But, you
Al,
know, there's...
Al, it's crazy. It's just, it's really, really crazy. Al, before I let you go,
sure.
How's it going with Tap Into? What are some things, I mean, not, no spoilers, but what are some interesting, some sexy topics you're going to be covering on and Tap Into in the coming days and weeks?
Well, I mean, you know, the election is the big thing in Jersey City. We're gearing up not just for the primaries, but for the council, and we're watching the candidates emerge. Bayonne, I just finished writing a story on the knocking down of Holiday Tree and Trim, which was like an institution for years, one of the holiday centers of, and it had international fame for some of its products, and that's real sad, but it's part of the times. Development's always an issue, but the elections are the big stories right now, and some of the, you know, the police and reaction, you know, interaction with the community in Jersey City, which is still trying to be resolved. We'll see. Those are the big issues. The next big thing is whether they can actually get a police review board in Jersey City. That's coming on the agenda shortly.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Al, before I let you go, did you mention the council races in Jersey City? Obviously, Mayor Fulop does not have an opponent. It looks like he's not going to. It seems like obviously the council races, maybe Board of Ed races later this year will be very interesting. Al, I would make the case, and again, I think each ward in Jersey City is going to have their list of candidates. I would argue that, and I hate to use this term because it's, you know, I'm a big sports fan, so you hear it a lot in the NBA. I think the race that's going to be really chippy and fickle and testy, I think it's going to be Ward E between Solomon and Hudnut. I think that's going to get ugly real, real soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And because Hudnut represents everything that Solomon dislikes, Hudnut became one of the key people for reforming in his own way, the police department in providing the quality of life stuff that doesn't sit well with the progressive. He represents, you know, the mainstream Fulop administration, but he's smart and he's more than Solomon's equal, and he's funded, and there are a lot of people angry at Solomon in his Ward D, and it's not, you know, where Solomon has the progressive vote. There's no way you're going to wrestle that out. But there are a lot of other people in Ward E that got left out, especially the business community and the landlords. And they're all going to be working against him. And as his race heats up, it's going to get more vocal because the progressives are never going to be back off. And so this will be a very, very vocal election.
Well, Al, again, I don't want to seem presumptuous, but it seems that the other incumbents, you know, Daniel Rivera, the at-large guy, seems to be, I think he'll be safe. I think obviously with Amy now running on Mayor Phillips' ticket, it looks like Rolando Lavaro is going to be on the outs. I mean, I know there are candidates in the other wards, you know, Ward C, D, B. I know that Jermaine Robinson in Ward F obviously has an opponent. But, again, I don't want to sound presumptuous. I don't want to sound like I'm being hateful on anybody. But it seems that the one race that probably is a little unpredictable is Ward E. I would make the case that the incumbents in the other wards, it might be a little close here or there, but I think the incumbents are safe in the other wards. Am I wrong here?
Well, I think Ward D and Ward C have issues, but the idea is that going after Bargiano is a mistake because he made a wise move going with the mayor because he got a lot for his buck. And now, you know, they're going after him, and he had been the alternative. So you're sort of trying to go to dismantle somebody who has very loyal following. Ward D, Saleh is a great guy, but he's new.
Yeah.
So if you're going to shake an apple from the tree, he's the one I would go after. He would be the easiest one to beat if you had a good organization, because there's a lot of young people, YUN, who are still looking to see where they're going to land. And if you can come up, and there's two or three really good candidates in Ward D, potential candidates in Ward D that could give him a run. But you're right. The big story is going to be Ward E, because that's for the heart. That's formerly Phillips' stomping ground. And it's going to be interesting to see where everything lands.
Oh, Al, you're right. And again, you know, there's still months away until November. And we know that obviously municipal races are nonpartisan per se in the sense of, you know, party. But it just seems that, you know, Ward E is very weird. I mean, you look at the thing, you look at the geography where, you know, yeah, you have the downtown, the bougie type of crowd, like, the, you know, some of the finance people that move into downtown. But then you go a little bit into the outskirts, and those are kind of old. I'm not saying this to be malicious. I mean, but like old Jersey City is still there on the outskirts of Ward E. Those are the people I think that Solomon may struggle to get their vote again. I mean, I get it that he won a runoff against Rebecca Symes, but that's 4 years ago. He didn't have a record.
Yep.
Now he's got a record he's going to run on. I think that's a challenge for Solomon. And I would make the case, too, I'm hearing that if Hudnut wins this council seat, it almost seems like this is the guy, I think, that checks off all the boxes, right? White, gay male, you know, attorney. That could be a guy that maybe Dems want to push in 2025 for mayor. But it seems like full of – I mean, he said he's not going to run again, so we'll have to trust Steve on his word. But it seems that Hudnut, if he wins this council seat, could be that guy that, hey, you know, he ticks off all the boxes for mayor, Al.
You're possibly right. But then that would put him against old Hudson County because A.B. DeGees is also in the mix. And that would be an interesting race.
No, I agree with you. I agree. I think it's something to watch out for. But, Al, listen, keep up the great work. You're always just a treasure of information to come on this program and my other podcast. But Al, stay safe. By the way, have you gotten vaccinated yet?
Oh yeah, we got it early. I got my second shot in late February. So yeah, I figured I'm not particularly concerned about it, but I figured at some point you're gonna need it as a requirement. And so I figured just get it over with and get on with. I'm not an anti-vax person anyway, so I'm just anti being imposed upon, you know.
Of course.
So, but I don't have anything against the vaccine. I had a rough 2 days after the second shot, which means, I don't know what that means, but it means my system's working, I guess. So it's good.
Well, Al, listen, stay healthy. We need you out there, bro. You are one of the great journalists that continue to do God's work, as they say, and really reporting the news in a credible way. So love you, man. Thank you so much for believing in my podcast, for being a guest when I contact you. And, again, thanks for supporting Politically Direct. And we'll talk to you again soon here.
Absolutely. Talk to you very soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care, Al. Bye-bye now. Folks, what a great episode today with Al Sullivan, again, the Tap Into columnist for Jersey City and Bayonne, obviously. He's a guy that is, you know, folks, he's a wealth of information, for God's sakes. You know, if you don't know this already, I mean, again, I don't know. Have you been living under a rock or something? But he's great, and I love having Al on. He's an amazing journalist, and he's a guy that, you know, I always look to for guidance and just how to go about doing this work. And again, he's a great source of information. Certainly, you know, if you don't read his stuff on tapinto.net, especially in Jersey and Bayonne, I suggest you start doing that because he's well worth the read. Folks, that's our show for this week. Again, I can't say enough about, you know, your devotion and loyalty to the program. I appreciate that. And certainly, you know, if you missed any part of today's broadcast, and certainly, or if you haven't checked out other recent broadcasts, do me a favor. Go to www.insidernj.com/podcasts, and you get to hear all of the previous episodes of the three-time award-winning Politically Direct right there. You can download the episode and listen to it anywhere at any time from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Now, if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, folks, at politicallydirectnj. And also hit up my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. Tons of new followers, plenty of likes. I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, and why not? There's some funny stuff on there for sure. Folks, also hit me up on Twitter at NoFilterUribe. That's at NoFilterUribe. And for all your Facebook subscribers, take a moment and please like Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. And again, ladies and gentlemen, remember, when you start your day, go to insidernj.com. It's the best journalism, folks. When you start your morning, you're going through your inbox. Guess what? When you go on the main page and you click on subscribe at the upper right-hand corner, you will see the morning intelligence briefing delivered free of charge to your inbox. And again, ladies and gentlemen, it's a reminder that the best journalism comes from Insider NJ. No, not anybody else. Not NorthJersey.com. Definitely not the Star Ledger. Definitely not NJTV. Definitely not the Asbury Park Press. But folks, it's Insider NJ. And I'm fortunate enough to work with an amazing team. Again, I can't say enough about the Graham family and their support of the program, specifically Mike Graham, who, you know, is a big fan of the show. And always whenever I don't get to run into him too often, but when I do, it's always very flattering words from him. So I'm grateful to that for his belief in the podcast and showing his ongoing support, as well as my boss, Insider NJGM Pete Onelia, who I tend to drive crazy sometimes. But, you know, hey, we drive each other crazy. It's okay. But, again, I can't say enough about how proud I am to be part of the Insider NJ team. I work, I would argue, with the best journalists in the state. Don't like a lot of their political views, but they're great writers and journalists. And, you know, they do their research and they write exceptional columns, such as Fred Snowflack. I love Fred. I look forward to reading his columns every week. He's an amazing writer, so you definitely want to check him out. And, you know, I'm not a fan of Jay Lasseter personally. I know the feeling is mutual. We do not like each other whatsoever. But I respect Jay in the sense of being a very credible journalist, a guy that is just a very thoughtful, insightful writer. And I really appreciate his columns. Again, I don't care for his politics whatsoever, but I know he doesn't care for mine either. That's okay. you know, but he's a guy you definitely want to read on a weekly basis, as well as our editor-in-chief, you know, Max Pizarro. You know, there are times over the years that, you know, Max's political views just absolutely irritate me. But, you know, I'm sure I irritate him also, but, you know, that's fine. You know, again, we don't have to love each other, just, you know, sort of be on the same team, as they say. It's sort of like playing organized sports, right? Like, you may not like your teammates, but at the end of the day, when you go out there and you try to perform and represent, you do it collectively as a team. You just try to, you know, use your skill set to help the team come out, you know, ahead and to win. And I think I bring a certain skill set to this team, and just like everybody else does. You know, even Alan Steinberg, you know, drives me crazy sometimes, you know, sort of like a lifelong Republican operative and you know, active member of the party. Obviously, you know, he's gone a little bit left, and it kind of drives me crazy sometimes. But, again, he writes very interesting columns, to say the least. So, again, folks, I can't say it enough, www.insidernj.com, the best journalism anywhere in the Garden State. Make sure you like Insider NJ on Facebook. Follow Insider NJ on Twitter. And remember, folks, to start and end your day with Insider NJ. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, thank you so much for tuning in this week here. A special thank you to tapinto.net columnist, and I would call the dean of Hudson County Journalism, Al Sullivan, for joining us here this week. Folks, enjoy the rest of the week. It's supposed to be good weather up here, at least where I'm at in North Jersey, some great temperatures. Enjoy the weekend. And again, for all you big pro wrestling fans, you know, it's WrestleMania weekend. It's not just one night, but it's a two-night affair on the Peacock Network, streaming online. And, you know, again, I remember WrestleMania 1 in Madison Square Garden, you know, March 31st, 1985. I tell you how old I was, but I remember it barely. But, you know, 37 years later, still a devoted pro wrestling fan. I'm looking forward to WrestleMania. You know, I'll be enjoying it this weekend and watching it. And, you know, I have my favorites that I cheer for, and I have the villains that I boo. It's that simple. So, again, for everybody, enjoy it, folks. Enjoy the rest of your week. Again, please party responsibly, especially if there's good weather. I'm sure many of you will be down the shore, you know, maybe outdoor dining, partying, drinking. Again, folks, just please be responsible during these warm days as we're trying to get back to some sense of normalcy. And that's big right now. So look after your neighbors, your elderly neighbors especially, folks. Stay safe and healthy. And I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio as fellow Insider NJ teammate and columnist Alan Steinberg joins me in his regularly monthly appearance here on the podcast. So you definitely want to tune in for that. So, again, I'll see you next week here, folks. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
bring us back together. I feel so good. I feel right. The music sounds better with you. Love might bring us back.